Oh hey, what's up? It's me, it's Austin, here in the Blanket Fort in North Hollywood, coming at you with a fresh new episode. I'm so excited about this episode. We got Chrissy Bear on the show. You know Chrissy Bear. He's the guy that mixes and masters this show. Chrissy Bear, the audio engineer. You go to marmalademusicslc.com, you tell him that you listen to People Pleaser, he gives you 20% off your project. That guy. You know that guy? And also, he doesn't just do podcasts, he does music. He kind of specializes in music. So if you got a single or an EP or an album you want him to work on, you go to marmalademusicslc.com, tell him you listen to People Pleaser and that it's your favorite show, and then he'll give you 20% off. That guy, that Chrissy Bear, he's the guest on the show this week. You get to hear what he sounds like, so that's very exciting. Fun fact about Chris, his last name is Bjorn, and Bjorn means bear in Norwegian. So Chrissy Bear is his actual name. That's not just a cute name, nickname I came up with for him. His name actually is Chris Bear. So, yeah, just fun little bit of trivia there for you. Also, gonna read a little review here from Apple Podcasts. If you don't know, you can go to Apple Podcasts, rate the show 5 stars, write a review. I'm gonna read your review on the show and I'll review you back, okay? It's a really fun, simple thing to do. If you haven't done it yet, if you're listening to the show and you know that we do this and you haven't done it yet, go do it. I don't get why you haven't done it yet. Okay? Go do it. It works like this. This is the one I'm reading this week. This is from Capuchin Turtles. I'm not sure if Capuchin, if I'm saying that right. Capuchin Turtles, but I know who this is. I think it's my friend Amanda. So, but it says Capuchin Turtles. If I'm saying that correctly. Must listen podcast series, 5 stars, because you gotta, but also 5 stars, okay? From spirituality to dreams to tipping in the restaurant industry, People Pleaser Podcast with Austin and guests covers a wide range of material. He's open to more controversial topics as well as topics you may have never ventured into learning about before. Definitely subscribe so you don't miss any upcoming shows. One of the best podcasts out there. Yeah, Amanda, thank you. And now I'm going to review you back. Okay, here's what I have to say about Amanda. I work with Amanda. We're servers in the restaurant industry. And I'm going to say this first because, first of all, Amanda is an aerial artist, and I'm going to talk about that. But I want to say this first. I have immense respect for people who really take pride in their day job, and that's something that I only recently discovered. I used to be really jaded about day jobs, and I would kind of make it a point to give the bare minimum at my day job because that was not my passion. I wasn't passionate about whatever my day job was. I wanted to be acting or making music or podcasting or doing anything other than whatever my day job was. So I always gave kind of a bare minimum effort at the day job. I've, in the last year of my life, have changed my attitude towards that, and I kind of wanted to try an experiment where, let's see what happens if I give more energy to my day job, and I really try to commit to it and be excellent at it. And it actually has made a whole world of difference. And Amanda is someone who really exemplifies that principle. She really takes pride in her day job, and she's an excellent server. And that's something that I think in the past I would have looked down on. I would have been like, why do you care about being a good server? Who cares? Do the bare minimum, get the tip, and leave. Like, why do you care about this job? And I actually respect so much that she takes pride in her job, and that she really takes pride in her work, and that she takes pride in being the best at her job that she possibly can be. I'm actually doing an episode, I'm recording it next week with my friend Sarah about day jobs and about finding joy in your day job. So that's an episode that's coming out soon. Like Amanda said in the review, I do lots of different topics, but that's one of them. And she's a really good example of someone who really just makes the most of her time at her day job. And it inspires me to try to do the same. Also, she's an aerial artist, which I just have so much respect for aerial artists. That the strength that takes. You can check her out, Ariel, the word Ariel.turtles on Instagram, and check out some of the stuff she does. And I think she posts about when her shows are happening, and you can go watch her shows if you happen to be in LA. She's very talented, very strong. That aerial art stuff is no joke. That takes a lot of strength. And yeah, she's got it in spades. So that's it. Yeah, you go to Apple Podcasts, rate the show 5 stars, leave a review. I'll read it and I'll review you back. So that simple. Okay, here's the show. It's hard for me to succinctly put into words the full, unending, ever-evolving complexity of a relationship like the one I have with Chris Bjorn. So I'll just keep it simple. He's my best friend. And for a little over a decade, he's also been my number one creative collaborator when it comes to making music. We did that thing that so many artsy kids dream about doing while they're growing up. We started a band. A couple bands, actually. A folk rock duo called Us Thieves and an electro-pop outfit called Boss TV. And we're not delusional about it, at least not anymore. We know who we are. The size and reach of what we do has never extended further than our immediate circle of super supportive friends and family, and even some of them don't really care for it. The reality is, it's mostly for us. And that's just fine. It has to be. Because neither of us has any intention of stopping anytime soon, so the satisfaction of just completing new projects without the added validation or hope of commercial success has to be enough. And for so many artists in the world, for most artists in the world, that's the truth. The audience is small, if one exists at all, and the person getting the most out of the stuff being created is probably the artist. That's not to say that the projects that creative types in small markets make don't have an impact on the audiences who come across them. Not at all. They do. It's just to say that my experience has been that if the art you're making will only make you happy, if it achieves a specific result, garners a specific amount of praise or attention, or elevates you to a specific status, then there's a chance that you might be setting yourself up for disappointment. You'll have to forgive the very laid-back and slightly unfocused pace of this conversation. Chris had been staying at my place in LA for a couple of days. He was in town for an audio engineering conference. I was coming down with something, and we did this first thing in the morning when all either of us had ingested was coffee, so it took me a while to get my bearings and to remember that the mics were hot and that the show was happening. But it more or less works as a portrait of just how Chris and I are with each other. It's easy for us to get distracted and go off on tangents. But in a nutshell, this is our story. And I didn't want to talk about it because we're this epic music duo who VH1 somehow forgot to do a rock doc on, and I'm bringing you this must-hear, warts and all, behind-the-scenes content that I know you just gotta have. I wanted to talk about it because chances are, we're just like you, listener, and our journey, our process, and our experience may resemble your own, or may offer you something that you can adopt into your process, or may provide you with plenty ideas on what not to do. Whatever the case, a little over 10 years ago, my best friend and I started a band, and this is that story. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to my BFF, Chris Bjorn, about starting a band. I think, I can't tell if I want to start with, talking about, that idea for that skit you came up with last night, because part of me goes, no, we need to keep that because I want to make that skit. But then part of me goes, no, I'm never going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of want to say it so that I kind of want to say it and see if someone else makes it and then be like, anyone listening to this know that this was Chris Bjorn's idea that I spat my hot tea into my cup when I heard it because I couldn't swallow it because I was laughing so hard.
I think it needs to be shared.
Yeah, we'll just say it on the podcast and then if anyone sees like some funny YouTube page make this skit, they know that they stole it from People Pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
But it was originally your idea. Tell the idea of what you had.
All right, so the idea is this. The movie Yesterday, the premise is that there's a big blackout, that he suffers a concussion and wakes up and no one remembers the Beatles. He's the only person in the world at the time who knows who the Beatles are, and he capitalizes off of that by releasing their songs as his own. And he gets shot to, you know, stardom immediately. And the idea for what we were talking about last night is the same thing happens, but he wakes up and realizes...
How long does it take him to realize this? Like, when does it come up in conversation? Okay, so the thing that he realizes is...
The thing that he realizes is that no one remembers the theme song for Full House.
He's just like... It's like 6 months after his like concussion, he's just kind of like somehow he's like playing poker with friends and someone gets a Full House and he's like, the milkman, the paperboy, and evening TV. And someone's like, what? Yeah, what? He's just like, you know, Full House. They're like, no, I don't know.
I don't know the reference.
I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, you know the TV show Full House? They're like, yeah, no, I know Full House. And he's like,
the
you
show
know,
still exists.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, Bob Saget, like, and like John Simmons. I know Full House. You know, the milkman, the paperboy, and evening TV. I was just like, what are you talking about? Is that an episode of Full House or something? He's like, it's the theme song. It's at the beginning of every episode. Just everyone at the table. No, that show didn't have a theme song. Just
that's why that show stuck out so much.
It was like one of the first TV shows in that generation to not have a theme song. It's kind of famously known for that.
That's why no TV shows have theme songs anymore.
Full House
changed everything.
Kind of revolutionized the game. Because episodes would just start. And there'd be no... And he just instantly like... Oh my God.
Wait, no one's ever heard this.
So then he goes and writes from memory the song, thinking it's going to be a big hit, and just no one really cares.
No one cares.
No one really gives a shit.
Guys, you need to listen to this song I wrote. Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great.
Good Whatever job. Happened to...
Well, could you imagine even just trying to, like, wow, I'm going to write that from memory, like... Who knows that whole song?
I do.
Oh, God, of course you do.
Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the paperboy, and even in TV, you missed you. I guess, well, I think that song has like several verses, the actual song, but yeah. All he knows is the jingle portion. So it's about a 30-second long song.
So I wrote this song. It's 30 seconds long.
Everywhere you look, everywhere there's a heart that's here to hold on to. This is him singing it from memory to his friend. Like, doesn't that sound good? He doesn't even play it on guitar or anything. And the friend's just like, I don't know. That's okay.
It's fine.
Sounds like you got a nice idea there.
It's like you need to add like a bridge to it and just completely take it in a different direction. And just like, all right, this is just worse now.
Just kind of, he's trying to pitch it to different networks to be the theme song for their TV show. Like, so you got this show, Game of Thrones. I think I got...
Yeah, like that song wouldn't work for shows anymore. It had a specific time frame that it could have worked.
Yeah.
And so writing it now would be utterly, like, useless. Anyone do with that?
Which is actually how most of that movie plays. It's kind of like he like, writes... certain Beatles songs and you're like, yeah, I don't actually think that I can't remember when the movie came out in 2018 or
yeah
like, I don't actually think that that song would be, like, a big hit that people would, like, lose their minds over. Like, I think he does an EP with this guy where he does, like, I Want to Hold Your Hand and, like, a bunch of these songs. I'm like,
that song wouldn't do, like, as well as it
did
back then.
If we never heard it and some guy was just like, oh, yeah, I'll tell you something.
Like a Back to the Future moment. Austin, you need to hear this song. Hold up the cell phone. I want to hold your hand. Go like, yeah, that's a catchy song. I kind of like it. Where can I find it? But you're not going to have the reaction, okay, forget everything I know.
This changes everything. But God, it's so much funnier if it's the Full House theme. Where is this Ben?
You need to hear this.
And he goes and tracks down the guy that wrote the song.
Yeah.
The guy's like a painter. It's like, yeah, you know, there was a time when I thought I'd be a songwriter, but I just decided to be a painter instead.
Just, no one cares.
No one cares. There's nothing different in the world. Yeah. Not a single thing has changed. Just the TV show Full House doesn't have a theme song. All right, so if anyone makes that skit, Chris Bjorn came up with it, and you heard it here first on People Pleaser. All right. Okay, so this is my best friend, Chris. He's a bad, bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Been best friends for, I'm turning 32 in like 2 weeks, and I think we've been best friends since I was like 15.
Yeah, for so very long.
You were like 16, so mm-hmm. That's 17 years.
Yeah,
that's 17 years too long. I'm getting mm-hmm. kind of sick of it.
Yeah, we're in too deep though.
Yeah, at this point it's just kind of like you just have to stay friends even though like I don't like you. And mm-hmm.
It's like being 60 and you're married and you're just like, I really don't want to start over.
I'm not going to fucking download Tinder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Friend Tinder. Like, yeah. Good luck.
Uh-huh. Meetup. Isn't there something called Meetup?
Yeah, there's Meetup. That's how people become friends now, I think. Similar hobbies.
Yeah, I'm going to message people on Meetup and say, you want to start a band?
On Meetup. Hey, I saw that.
My old bandmate is the worst, so...
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start a band? Yeah. Okay. So Chris and I are songwriting partners and kind of just stuck with each other business partners and mm-hmm.
Hopefully for good.
Yeah. Probably. Probably gonna be doing this.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
So how you do on this podcast?
We'll see how this works out and. Do a little trial run here. See if it sticks. I didn't do good enough notes for this. I have things laid out like our musical influences. I'll ask you, what would you say is the genesis of us writing music together? Like, because you always wrote music in high school. You were the guy. You were the one that, like, I don't know. People know. I think people can relate to this, that it's like you have those people who are songwriters in high school and like most of it is really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like most of it's like really, really bad. Like 15 and 16 year olds generally don't write good songs. That's why Billie Eilish is like such a big deal, because it's like anytime someone at that age can like be that, have that mature of a sound and that like clear of an identity, it's really, really sticks out. I think even like Conor Oberst was that way, and and even Chris Carrabba started like writing, you know, songs when he was like 16, 17.
All the Dashboard songs. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you were kind of that way in high school. I mean, I wrote songs in high school. They were really, really, really bad. But you had that, like, this just this instantly recognizable, unique style and voice that everyone was like, I mean, when you'd show, you know, it's like teenagers are always really hyperbolic about their friends' abilities because you just don't know anybody other than the people you go to high school with.
Oh,
so,
sure, yeah. The fact that you have a friend that does something like, I have a friend who writes songs, everyone wants to hear it. It's like, oh, that's so cool. And I think you're instantly going to think that at that age, too, that the songs are way better because that's the person that's doing them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You probably can. I feel like I appreciate like what you're saying, but I feel like I listen back And I'm like, all right. So I wrote three albums by the time like I had, you know, I was 18 or 19. And I look back now and I'm like, I think there's two songs on there that hold up. And that's my opinion.
I disagree. I think that there's plenty. I think you've absolutely grown as a musician and a songwriter, but I think that like the roots of who you still are today are still in those songs, and that's really impressive to me because
no, that's good.
I feel like my entire style and entire like way of approaching songwriting like didn't really come into being till I was like 20 and started smoking weed. Mm-hmm. You know, like I needed to like do some drugs before I got cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you were already smoking weed.
Yeah. I was already doing it.
Yeah, so you had a little head start on me. If you're listening out there, that's the key, you guys. You gotta smoke weed if you wanna write good songs.
Yeah, if you don't smoke weed, you'll write songs that are like as good as Creed.
That's the problem with Creed. Creed could have been really cool, but what's his name? Stamp or Doug, like Mike Stamp or something?
I don't know.
I'm going to look up the lead singer of Creed's name right now. It's something like something Stamp.
This has got to be the only time people look up who the lead singer of Creed is when they're just like, who is that guy?
Lead singer of Creed, Scott Stapp.
That's a name.
I thought it was Stamp. It's Stapp. S-T-A-P-P. That's a bad name.
Yeah.
Scott Stapp. Let's read what it says about him. Scott Stapp is an American singer, songwriter, and musician. Stapp is best known as the lead vocalist and lyricist of the rock band Creed. He famously never smoked weed, which is why his songs weren't that good.
Yeah.
It says that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's true. I'm looking at it.
Looking at it right here. You heard it here, folks. Boy, he looks sad. Like, looking at him as an older man is really depressing. Former frontman talks about his overdosing on prescription drugs led to psychotic episodes. See, that's the problem. Whoa. He skipped straight to, like, OxyContin and stuff, and he probably did it too late. It was probably after, like, no one really wanted to go to Creed concerts and stuff.
Yeah,
and
then, he was older than 27 when he did that.
Yep. Blew it, Scott.
But you know, there is a thing there. I remember before I started writing songs that I like look back on, I'm like, that was a cool song. I was writing like really, really emo songs, like just sad. And like, even before I'd experienced like a real breakup, I was writing songs about like real breakups. And it's not that I don't like the writing, but
yeah, the first song I ever heard you play, was called Misery Loves Company. I ate breakfast with her.
And
I thought that was the coolest title. And also it was so emo. Like it sounds like the name of like a Hawthorne Heights record, like Misery Loves Company. I ate breakfast with her by Hawthorne Heights.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, it felt so clever. And I mean, like in those things, you know, that's what we are listening to then. Like a lot of, and emo is still cool. That music still kicks ass.
Oh, yeah. And also, but your music was still really folksy.
Yeah.
Like you didn't like write screamo or like hard, like music for big bands. It was very folksy. Like the guitar was like, bow, dum, bow, make sure I
that's true.
Accurate, bow, dum, bow, dum, bow, dum, bow, before I expose you.
That was a cool song.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing when I was 15 years old. Like, I was just like, what in the world is this guy doing? Yeah.
I don't know. It was about the time, though, like for real, though. And I think it goes hand in hand. When I started smoking pot, you know, I wouldn't say like pot like did much other than like suddenly I'm listening to Bob Dylan. I'm listening to David Bowie. I'm listening to like these old folk acts. And for some reason, I don't know, I listened to a shit ton of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, you were the first person that first person my age that I knew that listened to those guys.
Mm.
And so I know it sounds really cliche now when I think about it, to be like, who are your influences? And be like, oh, you know, Dylan, Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's just like, oh, come on. Like, it's so cliche. But at that time, I didn't know anyone my age who was listening to Bob Dylan. And like, so I remember when I heard you play a cover of Don't Think Twice, It's All Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you were, I mean, first of all, the guitar picking was like really solid. And the fact that you had like learned that yourself and taught yourself how to play that song. And then the fact that you liked Dylan enough to be like learning Dylan covers and stuff like that. It just seemed really cool for a teenager. And I look back at it now and realize you were just a big fucking poser.
I was, yeah. Hey, I own three Bob Dylan albums, so like I can say like I'm the next Bob Dylan. I got the harmonica thing to wrap around my head and everything. He inspired me quite a lot. Yeah. But Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, so you were like the cool songwriting guy, writing emo songs, writing stuff about like drugs and about like real depression, and you know, and I was just writing about how I was sad that this one girl didn't like me, and that was about it.
Well, I remember, I don't know, I definitely in high school and afterwards, you know, I went on a Mormon mission. I went to the wonderful, beautiful, tropical country of Houston, Texas.
And, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Austin. Austin convinced me to go out there. Also, my drug use and trying to get over it.
I just told him, I said, you know, Chris, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life if you don't go on a mission. And he did. And then about a year into his mission, I decided I wasn't going to go on mine. And he called me on the phone and said, you're a bad friend.
That's true. But I remember getting back and you played a show at that place, Ed's, across the street from the University of Utah.
Big Ed's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the first show I watched you play after I got home. And I had been writing while I was on my mission, too. And I was ready to come back and just dominate the music world. And I was so glad when I came back. Like, Austin had been, he'd been doing such a killer job of upping his game that I watched him play and I'm like, holy shit. Okay, I want to do music with that guy. It was like that. It was a split second thing where I was like, all right, I'm in. And what it was, so that was the end of 2008. It was less than a year later that we're just writing songs. Well, the first song we wrote was before my mission. Remember?
We did write a song about the Hammond Twins.
And that was fun.
Yeah, we wrote a song about the Hammond Twins.
So there already was a history there, and it worked out really well writing that.
It's called You Babes You.
Yeah, You Babes You. God. Such bros.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was fun, though.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So what changed for you, though, during that time frame? I'm curious. I'm on this mission, and you leave the church, and you start writing badass music. Was it weed?
Well, probably a little bit of that, but also I was listening to your albums a lot while you were on your mission. I missed you a lot, and I was always, like, harmonizing with all of your songs. And I was, like, determined that when you got home, I was going to say, hey, I want to re-record a lot of those songs with you and just have me harmonizing with you because check this out.
Oh, yeah,
so
I remember
come up
that.
With, like, all these, like, really cool – I was like, you need two voices on a lot of these songs. And I just felt like they sounded so much more full. But that was also kind of – and still is very much so my crutch as a songwriter and musician is like I hear everything with layers, and it's probably one of my biggest weaknesses, I think, is that a lot of my music struggles to stand on its own and needs that like extra layer of harmony or that extra layer of like here's what the second guitar sounds like or here's what the bass sounds like or here's like this is designed to have a lead line right here, you know?
Well, I would argue that makes your music a hell of a lot more interesting because I have like 30 something albums up, and out of that, all of them minus like three songs are just me and a guitar. And it's nice. A lot of the songs I really like a lot, but it doesn't take very long until you're like, all right, let's listen to something with a little soul. Let's listen to something that actually has bass on it. I'm tired of this guy's voice. And
I think that's true of anything though. Like you can like, I don't know, if you listen to enough music, like you can, I only ever want to listen to any band for so long. Like I don't want to just like listen to nothing but Whitney for an entire day, because after a little bit I'm like, all right, that's enough of your fucking falsetto voice,
right?
Like, I really like that band, but after a little bit it's just every single song is just like you know, and any band starts sounding like that after
that's
a while.
That's true.
But yeah, I definitely had a goal to get involved with you by the time you got back, but I didn't think we would formulate a band. I was just hoping that you would let me kind of like either perform with you and just sing harmonies to Chris Bjorn songs.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or that we could re-record some of those songs. And then we started writing songs together.
2009.
I think the first song that we actually sat down together and wrote full out was In This Mind of Mine. But the first song that I kind of stepped in and contributed on was A Simple Love. And because you had written it, you had written out the like the bones of it, which is, this is kind of a way that this became a blueprint for a lot of the way that we worked. You had written the bones of the song, and then I came in with the verse, I'm sweating bullets just a bit.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted roses to appease you, my dog, you know. And it was kind of a thing where like we wanted that that we wanted something to go in a round with the thing that you had come, the I put my head, I put my heart in this.
Right.
So I think I came in and I added that harmony, the da 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 ba ba bum ba ba ba, you know, and then we wanted something to go in a round. And that's so like, but that became a way that we, a blueprint that we used over and over and over again, where one of us would kind of come to a session with like most of a song done,
yeah,
and like the bones, and then we just ask the other person like, here's what I'm looking to add on this, and the other person would contribute the finishing touches or the joie de vivre or the je ne sais, sais quoi. Is it je ne sais pas, je ne sais, I don't know French.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of letters that are right in what you're saying, I'm sure of it.
Yep.
But I agree, that is exactly how it was. We, you know, I remember like you showing, going or coming to me and you're like, check out this. And it was UOU and me going like, that's the best Us Thief song yet. Holy shit. And you're like, yeah, and it's not all the way, and just like listening to it. And you, I think you were done with the song, but I might have added like just a little bit of this, a little speckle. And spackle a little bit of that, but that's, I think for a lot, that was some of our best songs. Or there were other ones where we sat down and we just like constructed it just like for 3 hours straight. Do you remember when we would hang out with Tucker and he would get so annoyed? He's like, are you guys just gonna do this all night? And we go, yes.
You go, yeah, we told you that when we, when you said you wanted to hang out with us. You said, we're writing songs tonight.
And then there was one time he's like, okay, well, can you just do it like not at my house?
Yeah, but my, his house, well, oh, like at his parents' house.
At his parents' house in the basement.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We would do that. I was going to say, but I lived with Tucker in that. Yeah, we would do that sometimes. We were bad friends. for sure. Tucker's been so good about just kind of suffering our bullshit.
He did not like Us Thieves at first.
I don't think he's, we wrote, likes like, them still. The,
oh yeah,
maybe. I think he's gotten like maybe like nicer about it or more open to it, but he's been pretty clear that he's just like, no, that's just not my bag, guys. Like,
yeah,
it's just yeah.
But yeah, no, we were onto something like from the get go, and I think the biggest part of that working out was, and why it's hard to find other people to play with, is you're not going to have a good time writing songs with people if you don't like what they write, like. At the time, I looked up to Austin. I was like, his writing is killer. I'm stuck in this sort of pattern, and he's in this pattern that I would love to be more involved in, of like songwriting or structure. And I think that was what created this possibility for Us Thieves to thrive, is that we fed off of each other instead of competing. We totally fed off of each other.
We really respected each other, and we also like, we never took it personally when we gave criticism or like feedback. It was almost always in improv. They have this thing called yes and. Have you ever heard about this, Chris?
I haven't.
So the rule of like, one of the big rules of improv is you don't say no to someone's idea, otherwise it kills the scene. So if you're doing like an improv scene and someone's like, my God, we've got to get this man to a hospital. Like, you can't go like, why do we need to get him to the hospital? There's nothing wrong with him. Like, you can't do that because it kills the premise that someone else set up. You have to say, like, yes, like, I've never seen someone with a whole gumball machine shoved up their butthole. So you have to say yes to the premise that this guy needs to get to the hospital and then add the gumball machine up the butthole.
Yeah.
You know, so that's essentially the way that we worked, is we'd always say, and even if something wasn't an idea that made it to the final song, it was always like, yes, I like that. And I think we should do blah, 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 blah.
That's true.
I think what you did for UOU was, I remember we did that on the beach of Bear Lake one day.
Oh,
you
yeah, added, that's
you were
right,
like, because you were like, this should have a breakdown where we start really rocking, and you added the whole like banana bump 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 bump,
yeah,
like, you know, like,
yeah,
we
right.
did the we, and so we started building the structure together, and we would do stuff like that where you go, cool, I like that, I think we can break up the structure here by, and you've done that for me in my personal songs where you've just gone, that's cool, you repeat that chord progression over and over, I think you can use the same melody but with this chord progression, and it'll just give you a second option to go to. And it's a really good way of yes-anding someone. But that's also, true. Yeah, you need to have that respect, because it's a really rare thing to find. And I've found it with maybe a couple other people. Like, it didn't last as long, but like I used when I wrote songs with Emma Zink, for instance,
right.
Emma Hatcher now. I don't know if she listens to this. I would love it if Emma Hatcher listened to this.
Hey, Emma.
Hey, Emma. Living up, living up there in your snow cabin.
Yeah.
But I respected her so much as a songwriter. And
she was a good songwriter.
Yeah. And I was willing to kind of just like go with her music too. I was just like, yeah, that's a good song. We'll just do that. Like, and I'll just,
yeah. Well, that's how a lot of it goes. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to start a band, like there is probably, I've always found, I just have a hard time, you know, besides Austin, I have a really hard time finding anyone who is willing to compromise, or people are so gung-ho on like, I have my songs. I don't want to write any new songs with you. I have my songs and I want to make a band with my songs. And I think that's a huge problem. Because it's hard to find like your place in someone else's song.
If you can find a drummer and a bassist and a lead guitarist who fucking love your songs and just want to play your songs, or here's the other thing, if you have money to hire a bassist and a guitarist and a drummer who you just say, here's what you're playing.
That might be better.
And that's the more likely scenario, but how many people actually have money for that? And the more likely scenario is you're going to have to hire someone. But yeah, if you can find those people who are just down for what you're doing, that's really cool. I've never had much luck with that. But the other option is you're going to have to be a collaborator and try to be building something from the ground up.
You know what was a really cool thing about Us Thieves too is during that time frame, it's not like everything we wrote was Us Thieves. There were songs where I remember you going, well, this is going to be an Austin Archer song, going like, I want to have this be mine. And it was a thing that was like, awesome, play it, let's hear it. And it was never going to be like an Us Thieves song. And it might be a song we might play sometimes and I might like harmonize or play some guitar, but it was understood from right off the bat that this is not an Us Thieves song, and vice versa. And I thought that was a really cool thing that we did. We retained our solo personality, or you know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
And we had a clear brand for Us Thieves. Like it was pretty clear. Oh, yeah. If you go listen to
Best Friend Rock or something.
Yeah, totally. We for the first couple of years, every time we played shows, we would introduce every song and go like, "This song is about friendship."
Yeah, that's right.
And just like, I think the idea with Us Thieves is it was sort of a respite from the two of us, like our sullen, self-pitying, kind of more introspective emo songs. Now, Us Thieves did have some songs that were, you know, about,
like I Sank Into the Blue.
Yeah, sad. But even our sad songs were fun. Like the idea behind Us Thieves is that it should always be upbeat and it should always be fun. We always wanted to be making as much noise as we could as a two-man folk duo.
Yeah.
Like we wanted to be like kind of like surprising people when we'd go to shows and be like, oh, it's just two guys with the guitars. Here we go. It's going to be Simon and Garfunkel. But then we'd bring like a lot of energy.
Yeah, we brought the heat.
Yeah, we brought the heat for sure.
Yeah.
And we'd, you know, do different setups where like we'd have a little tom and a little kick drum or a little tambourine action.
I'd bring my Bob Dylan harmonica set up.
Yeah, I used to.
Oh, and we had dueling harmonicas. That was cool when we did that.
Dueling harmonicas. I would break tambourines in shows because I'd be hitting them so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had like a tambourine budget.
Mm-hmm. Because for a while we had like a little like hall of broken tambourines hanging on the wall.
That was cool. Uh-huh. Yeah. Totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Pretty hard rock. But yeah, I think if you go look up Us Thieves and listen, you'll hear that there's a clear brand there.
Yeah.
And we would sort of, it helped us keep our solo stuff separate, where it'd be like, yeah, this is clearly a Chris Bjorn song, or this is clearly an Austin Archer song. And then if something felt like it had the room for, or it really was begging to have the two voices on it and the extra beef, then it would go in the Us Thieves camp.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing too. Coming up with band names, how many names over the years have we texted each other? I got one for you, bud.
I can't.
David Broey.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's like, bro. I still think it's a funny band name.
It's a good one.
To just be named someone else's name. Mm-hmm. Like, to just have your band name be like Joan Baez. And it just is her name.
Oh, yeah. My favorite band name I ever came up with was Everclear 2.
Everclear.
You can't be mad, Everclear. It's a different name.
Other Creed. Just, that's essentially what our band name was. We were so excited. I think you texted me, you mountain, comma, us thieves. Yeah. And that was the idea.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I think I said like SLC bandits or something like that. Yeah.
We had like the idea thief. Or...
The bandits or yeah. And then we found a band called the bandits. Uh-huh. And then we said SLC bandits. And it was like, that's still stupid because there's a band called the bandits. And also like that's really limiting to the SLC market. And then you texted me, you mountain, comma, us thieves. And I wrote back, us thieves.
Yep.
And then.
That's right.
And then we got so excited, and then we found out that there was like this semi-popular, like Swedish, kind of electro pop,
thieves
like us.
And we're just like, nah, who cares?
Yeah,
this is a cool name.
Yeah, we're gonna stick with it. And then we found out about this other band called Crown Us Thieves.
Oh yeah,
and they were the worst.
They were the worst.
Thieves Like Us is a really cool band. Yeah. Thieves Like Us is actually really good. But Crown Us Thieves was awful, and just I hate those guys.
Yeah, if you're listening, just get out of here.
Yeah, fuck you, Crown Us Thieves.
Unsubscribe for a minute and then resubscribe. Yeah, just think about what you did.
Get out of here. Yeah, I still text you. I think mm-hmm. we still both text each other band names all the time.
That's the most fun part about making a band, I think, is just coming up with the name.
Yeah.
And if you can make a good enough band name, then you're like, oh, this is really happening.
Yeah. If you can really make something that you could see, like branding and like, see, you know, you think about it though, some band names, like I always think about the Beatles and like, while it is a great pun, while it's like a really great like play on words and stuff, it's also like, it's kind of a stupid band name.
It is.
And it's like, it's kind of like a really dumb band name, but it's the biggest band of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, and vice versa, Creed is kind of a really cool band name. Like, that multi-use of that name, like your credo, your creed, your mm-hmm. like what you're about, Creed, like it's a pretty cool band name, and they're one of the worst bands of all time. So, I don't know. I mean, The Head and the Heart, that's a pretty cool band name.
That is a cool one.
Yeah. Bright Eyes.
God, that's a cool one.
It's a good band name. Yeah. Dashboard Confessional, that's terrible. Although, I also love it.
At the time, it was so good. It was like, whoa, it's a confession on his dashboard of his car. Like, I could just imagine him being in his car just so sad. And I would think, I'm in my car listening to this and I'm so sad. It just made sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it was. The first time I heard it, I was like, I know exactly what he means.
Dude, screaming. I'm screaming infidelities right now.
Your hair is everywhere.
Oh,
it is screaming infidelities and taking its wear.
And for real, hands down, this is the best day
I can ever remember.
God, that's so dumb. It's so good, though.
And for real, expect me to apologize for things that you've done wrong while you're admitting nothing.
Uh-huh.
He says, you're owning up to nothing. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Chris Carrabba is such a good songwriter.
I remember when Vindicated came out. That's like, I don't know. I was in high school and I obviously did not have a large vocabulary. And in my head, it was like, well, he just opened up the dictionary and found a word that no one knows.
He really liked doing that.
He
liked using fancy words and like fancy language to like, I mean.
You know, that is a thing that even back then bothered
me. Screaming infidelities is a really like fancy way to say that I smelled some other guy's cologne on your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even now there is a thing that I find obnoxious that people that. Like, oh, let's pull out a thesaurus and find like a really neat way to word this. When you're writing a song, don't do that.
I write sins, not tragedies.
Yeah.
Like I guess that's not a thesaurus thing, but it is that like that flowery language of the emo pop punk.
Mm-hmm.
Like
being poetic in your wording is not the same as finding another word that means the same thing. You find poetry, you know, you find a way to word what you're trying to say, but you don't have to use this fancy word that no one cares to like look up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just don't use a thesaurus. I don't like the
Good point. Okay. So we did Us Thieves.
Yeah.
We did Boss TV a few years back. Like, that started, like, what, like 5 years ago? And that was another thing where I think every time you and I do a project together, it's always, like, meant to be, like, a respite from our other stuff. Yeah. And Boss TV was, like, this ultimate, like, relief from years and years and years of trying to, like, chronologue our – is that a word, chronologue?
Love it.
I'm coining it if it isn't. Our, like, our depression and our anxiety and our, like, romantic issues and stuff. And then Boss TV came in and it was, like – all we want to do is just make fun dance music.
Yeah, yeah.
Like retro, like lo-fi, homemade dance music.
Yeah, dance electronica pop sounded like the best idea, which it was.
Yep, sounds like it could be the soundtrack to like a Nintendo 64 game. Fun. Just the whole idea was just like, we're not even really necessarily talking about stuff. We have a song on our on our debut album called I Got Moves that's just about us talking about how we got moves. Mm-hmm. Just like, I got moves, and I'm in the club, and I see you over there moving with your moves.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, those are some pretty cool dance moves you've got. Yeah. I've never danced like this before.
I've never danced so hard. Yeah, so much fun. That was so good. We both go, the beat drop comes in when we both go, I've never danced so fucking hard.
Yeah. No, that was right on though. It's, you know, we were writing the same thing for so long, you know, better versions of the same thing, albeit, but we got into Us Thieves and it was still so similar. We're like, we need to get out of acoustic. We need to get out of being sad. Let's do a side of us that people haven't heard us do.
Yeah, I had just kind of finished writing songs for the album Corey Feldman, where I had the song Originality on there, which was like a big theme in that album, where it's like I was so tired of like the chords G, C, and D, and just like the same chords on the guitar over and over and over again, and the same kind of just like tired ideas being like, it's like every time I'd sit down to write a new song, it would just be like, well, let's see what C, G, D, and maybe a little A minor and F have for me today.
Yeah.
Like, let's see what I
how oh, which
ways I can sort of twirl these guys. And like the dance music's like, cool, I'm gonna make a whole song with just the bass being G and C, but no one's gonna know because now this time it goes.
Oh, that's the best.
And it's a whole. It was like a whole new lease on songwriting, which was.
Yeah. And you're bound to, you can't write a sad song when you just have some bass synth going from G to C, like you're talking about. Like, try making that sad. Try making that personal and emotional. Instantly, you're going to write a song you've never written before. Just totally changing up the instrument, especially electronic, just changed the entire game. And to me, it taught me that I am not constricted to just writing folk, you know, acoustic, whatever. That I can write whatever. It's just you need to change up how you're doing it and what you're using.
Well, and it changed up. It opened up, I think, our sense of structure too.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, cool. Now, like, rather than just finding the lyrical structure of, like, how am I going to tell the story of this song, verse one, verse two, verse three,
right.
It now becomes, like, how am I going to construct the musical movements of this song? Because almost every single Boss TV song has an instrumental breakdown where, like, it – because most of the songs kind of like are more about the beats and the instruments than they are about the lyrical anyway.
Yeah,
and so it all became about like how do you get to the, you know, the 64 bar musical breakdown or like the like this these long like musical breakdowns and like how do you structure it so that it builds to that? When do you structure and beat drops and stuff like that? And that just sort of like that I think made us stronger songwriters in our personal songwriting too, to go, okay, cool. I can mess around with format a little bit more. And it definitely opened up our world of like audio production on the computer, on the computer side. I think Boss TV was probably the beginning of you wanting to do Marmalade Music a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Like, getting used to the recording interface and getting used to recording with like everything being in tempo and just knowing that
you that's a novel idea for us. Like, let's actually have stuff like in tempo.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's have stuff really locked down solid. Like, this is going to be legit.
Well, and what was really neat about it is we made this music that we're like, we can never recreate this live. We can't play this show live.
Yeah.
And we tried once, but we literally did karaoke, which was cool.
We literally just did karaoke tracks of Boss TV songs while we shot the audience with confetti and like silly string and like threw glow sticks into the audience. audience and just kind of danced around. It was pretty fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally. It took like both of us to this area where suddenly we're getting more comfortable with the idea of, and I, you had been doing this way longer than I have, even GarageBand when you had on your iPad like 10 years ago, you had always been layering things. Mm-hmm. That's always been a thing you've been doing, but it's something I hadn't really done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was such a game changer just for me. Do you feel like for you that time, like, did it open up your world of possibility? Because I feel like since then you've been more creative in using like whatever synth you use, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you've always been doing that. But to me, it seems like you've been more creative since.
Well, yeah, since I got that, I started when I got an iPad. I think it was iPad 2, and it had GarageBand built into it. And it blew my mind. Because before then I was recording all my songs just on like a little
iPod Nano. Or iPod Nano.
And so everything was just, and you could, I think, multi-track on those, so I would do things like I would record myself doing like harmonies and stuff, but that's about the furthest it went. And then with the iPad, I suddenly could do all these like, and I got really into the idea of like layering in like lots of synths and electronic instruments into my acoustic emo bullshit, you know, and that was really fun, adding in like big synth layers and, you know, synth drums and synth bass and synth lead lines and stuff like that, and not really caring about the clashing of styles. And it was still really messy in those iPad days because I wasn't using a metronome, and I was basically adding the synths on top of my kind of loosely recorded acoustic guitar. So the acoustic guitar and the vocals would be recorded live without a metronome and without a drum track, without a click or anything like that. And then
so much harder to track the drums after that.
Yeah, and then I'm trying to layer in the synth and the bass on top of that and trying to like play along with myself in time. And so everything still has that really messiness. But it definitely, that was the beginning for me of toying around with that. And then like actually getting like upgrading our software and stuff. And then when we began doing Boss TV, which was another thing where it's like, that band name too is like, I think we did that.
I don't even remember where that came from.
I think we were drunk and we were just literally throwing out band names for like an entire night and looking things up and seeing what had been done and seeing what had been used. And I think for me, it came from like the idea of like Boss being like an 80s.
Like that's Boss.
Yeah, that's Boss. Like, and then like something about like, I don't know, like boss fights and video games and stuff, and like the boss fight music intensifies and stuff, and then just like, I don't know, Boss TV sounding like a throwback retro thing, which was kind of the vibe of the band.
Yeah.
And then also that it doesn't really need to mean anything. It's just meant to sound fun.
Which is that, that was the whole point of the project was let's just make some fun stuff, going back to what you said at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
And for the second time, we started a band. Or we just started another band. Okay, really quick, I want to get into kind of musical influences for both of us, because this is something I thought about doing an entire episode with you on, is like each one of these things, but I don't know, I don't see you enough to do that, so I'm going to just kind of pop through these things.
Great.
Pop punk music.
Oh, man. Okay. Oh, I could just go down the list. I could just go down a list of it, but the first things that come into my head that still are in my how I write today, bands like The Starting Line, you remember them?
Uh-huh.
Newfound Glory. Oh, here's a huge one. Yellow Card.
Yellow Card's in my list.
Yeah.
Because you knew Yellow Card.
Oh, yeah.
Chris is good friends with Yellow Card, just so everyone knows.
I was pretty cool when I was 17. And I look back and think, why did these grown men want to be friends with a 17-year-old boy? And I'm starting to wonder a little bit.
How old were they, though? Were they like 20, 21?
They were like 20. No, I guess they weren't too old. Like 23, 24.
They probably seemed
24.
Really old.
They seemed really old, but they probably weren't too old. And I was a huge fan.
Yeah.
They once dubbed me Yellow Card's biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Past that, though, there were, What are they called? My Chemical Romance.
My Chemical Romance,
which
is awesome.
They are awesome. I just started liking them last year when they.
Yeah, I don't think we listened to My Chemical Romance when they were big, but now when I listen to My Chemical Romance, I'm like, oh, they're so cool.
Yeah.
Helena's such a cool song.
Who's the band that sings "I'm on Fire"? What's the name
Motion
of that
City
band?
Soundtrack?
Motion City Soundtrack. Huge.
Yeah,
huge
Motion
influence.
City Soundtrack was awesome.
What's on your list?
On my list is Blink-182. It's the first album. One of the first albums I ever got. Totally. I don't know how my mom allowed me to get this album.
Was it Take Off Your Pants and Jacket?
No, although that's a great title. They literally have an album called Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. And then, the first one I got was Enema of the State.
Oh, man.
Which the cover is that like sexy nurse with putting on the glove, like she's about to give the whole band an enema.
That's right.
And that was a little bit of a sexual awakening for me. But I remember like buying that at Media Play and my mom getting it for me and putting it on the car on the way home. And I put on Adam's song and she was like, "Is this song about someone killing themselves?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Well," and then we're listening to other songs. She's like, "They swear a lot on this album." I was like, "Yeah."
It had a big parental advisory thing on there.
Also, it's called Enema of the State. Yeah. Like, I don't think Julie even looked at it. I think she just like let me buy it. But yeah, Blink-182 was huge. Yeah. I loved their sense of humor and also like how they could go from being really fun and like having a big sense of humor and then having a song like Adam's song where like it gets really serious. I thought that was really cool. Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, duh. Clarity.
Huge. Yeah.
That album, I just got on vinyl, by the way.
Huge. Yeah. The Format. Now, would The Format be pop punk or indie rock?
I feel like their first album, The Interventions and Lullaby, I feel like that's pop punk. Their
next album, pop punk they get. The next album is indie rock.
Indie rock through and through. That, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think there were any bigger Format fans in Salt Lake than us.
Oh, yeah.
We went to every single Format show at the venue, and that I talked about earlier in the show, the very first episode of the show, I talked about in the episode called Taste, I talked about how I would borrow my friend's girl jeans to go to shows, and you're that friend.
Oh, that was so full fun. Circle. When all you guys would come over to like wear some of my band shirts and my girls' pants.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
We'd come over and be like, "Well, if we're going to go to the show, I have to be wearing Chris's Juliana Theory t-shirt and Chris's twin sister's tight jeans."
Wait, didn't Lincoln, or who was it? Was it Lincoln that wore eyeliner once, or was he just always talking about wanting to wear eyeliner?
He probably did, and maybe Jesse did too.
I could see them doing that.
Yeah, and like they would like comb their hair different when we'd go to the concerts.
Jesse would be trying to emo himself. I would do that too. Yeah.
Because I would have like my hair always spiked up, and then when we would go to the concerts, I'd try to do different things. So I'd try to make it a little bit more emo. Like, I can't be seen crowd surfing with my preppy American Eagle clothes on.
Speaking of, when's the last time you crowd surfed?
Probably then. Probably in high school. I can't believe that it was fun as a teenager to go and be smashed in a room that's way overcrowded, and be like people on all sides of you soaking wet with sweat, and then climb on top of a bunch of strangers and kind of just like mash your body across their heads and just like landing on people's heads and necks and shoulders, and people are like kind of punching you because they're mad at you
and
pushing you up and just like hitting you, and you're just laughing like the whole time, like with your butt just like landing on someone's skull, and like that's a fun time. And then,
man, I went to, you remember the band Mest?
Yeah.
So they played in Salt Lake a couple months ago. I went to their show with some of my friends, Travis, he's my redhead friend, my ginger friend, and then my cousin Aaron.
Yeah.
We saw them because we loved Mess back in the day. We went to their shows, and everyone there, they were like in our age group. Like, there were people that liked them at that time, and no one knew. No younger people. But everyone as a group, like this guy, Tony, the lead singer, he did a good job of getting everybody to act like our bones didn't hurt and that we were like 17 years old again. And we were like moshing. We were doing all this shit. I crowd surfed.
Whoa. Yeah. Cool.
And it was awesome. But then I thought, all right, I don't want to do that anymore. So I just hung out in the back for the rest of it. But
for a little bit, for maybe 5 minutes.
And it was cool. It was nice. I didn't get, like, do you remember leaving those shows back in the day and your whole shirt is soaked? Like,
you'd be soaking wet.
We could dance so hard that, like, literally, your shirt is soaking wet. Like, you jumped in a pool.
Yeah.
And then, like, my shirt got a little wet, and I was kind of proud. Yeah. Kind of proud of myself.
I feel like that's what I can do these days. Well, I think the last time I probably really got into a concert, it's probably been, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
I still like watching shows, but that's why I like house shows and stuff. Or if I'm going to go to a concert of a big band, like, I need to be able to just kind of, like, sit still and listen to the music. But I think the last time I like could really get into it was probably like 25, 26.
Yeah.
And even then it was like I could do it for like 15 minutes at a time.
Right.
But in high school it was the whole show.
Yeah.
All three acts. And just dancing the entire time.
And we'd make sure we were up at the very front.
Yeah. push our ways up to the front. And those shows are still so vibrant in my mind. Like the theatrics that like Nate Roos would do, mm-hmm. and you know, the ways that he would make the show like different from the album, and like change the lyrics. And why do people love it when the band says the name of the town?
That's so fun. Whoa, he just said Utah. I'm from Utah.
He likes Salt Lake.
I wonder if he says that in Colorado.
Yeah. Salt Lake, this has been so much fun. Oh my God, really? Because it's been so much fun for me. Who else? Okay, this is my question. Oh, Jack's Mannequin and Something Corporate.
Oh, duh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I played two-hand touch flag football with flag football with Something Corporate.
Are you serious?
I was on Yellow Card's team.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah, I two-handed touched Andrew McMahon.
Whoa.
Yeah, touched his sides.
I don't know who that is.
He's the lead singer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's Jack.
He has such an emo voice. Like, so he has, of all the voices, like, of all the pop punk voices, like, that, like, thing where it's like, no, like, the blah, blah, oh, yeah. blah, blah. Like, his is so intense.
I woke up in a car.
Well, this is morning. It's where I spend the most time thinking about what I've given up. Like,
oh, the one I always made fun of was dark blue, dark blue. Yeah,
dark blue, yeah. Have you, like 10 syllables in the word blue. Like, just like, why are you doing so many different vowel sounds? Dark blue. Have you ever been alone in a crowded room?
But man, he nailed it, because those are still in our head. I won't ever forget those melodies.
Oh, dark blue is an awesome song with that piano. And he had. Jack's Mannequin and Something Corporate were really good at being really fun while being really emo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Super fun and upbeat while being super emo.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there are certain Dashboard Records that are pop punkish. A Marco Mission, A Brand, A Scar. Totally. I know every single Dashboard album, just so everyone knows. A few years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Brooklyn and my friend Caitlin Mills reached out to me and was like, "Hey, I have tickets to Dashboard Confessional in Manhattan tonight. Do you want to go?" And I was like, do you know that I am obsessed with Dashboard Confessional? And I went and I knew every single song.
Yeah.
And I hadn't listened to Dashboard in maybe like 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. And I was singing along to every single song.
It's the best.
And then she goes, she was so surprised that I was having so much fun. She was like, "Oh, I didn't know that you liked them this much." She goes, "My friend said that Chris is playing a private show afterward in Brooklyn that like she knows about." And I was like, "Yeah, we're going to that."
Wait, you went to that?
So we went to this private show afterward.
I never heard about this.
It was just him on stage without the band playing acoustic songs. And
you're
I was 5 feet away from him. And I was, again, singing every single song, knew the words to every single song.
God,
and it was just
cool.
Chris Carrabba right there. And I'll tell you what, I was so impressed that, because you know how loud he sings and
incredible.
How hard he is on his voice. He sang probably that night 30 songs and his voice never wavered.
Yeah. That guy is incredible.
Yeah. And the fact that I was like, "You've been doing this for 15 years mm-hmm. and
it still hits everything.
And you're hitting every single note and you sound just like you do on the album." It was really impressive and really cool. Question for you.
Yes.
Is Jeff Rosenstock the best pop punk songwriter ever?
Oh my God. He's so good. The answer, I think he might be, because I like everybody's stuff so much. This guy has gotten way older and he's still making them.
Yep.
And they kick ass. It's pop punk for adults.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is pop punk for teenagers. This is pop punk for adults. So answer, yes.
If you don't know who Jeff Rosenstock is, go listen to Jeff Rosenstock's album, Worry, right now. Man. Go listen to the entire album. If you only listen to one song, listen to...
like Wave Goodnight to Me.
Wave Goodnight to Me, or College Festival Song, mm-hmm. But probably Wave Goodnight to Me. But listen to that whole album. What's fun is he does quick hitting, like 2 to 3 minute long songs, and they're all just bangers. They're all just like high intensity, high energy, fun songs. It's a guy that you can tell was raised on pop punk and was raised on this style of music, and he just never wanted to let it go, and like his whole drive is just to have a fucking fun time, and like
yeah, if he's you like go to the Andrew WK of pop punk.
Yeah, he's just trying to party. He's totally. And like you can tell that the guy probably like is a pretty big alcoholic and like has seriously,
it's like in his mid to late 30s. Yeah, like, you see all pictures. This stuff's still about like drinking,
just and about partying and just like raging.
Yeah, Jeff, take it easy, but dial it back a notch.
Yeah, Jeff, we're worried about you. Like. Like maybe like get in a program or something, but never stop being you. But like, yeah, you see photos of him and it's like he's just balding and like kind of overweight and like just like really sweaty all the time. And just talking about like just raging and just drinking tall boys and like and just partying and like, but there's something, there's a folksiness to his songwriting style.
There is.
There's a blue collar working man, like country element where like he's singing about like being low income, being it's like there's a David Dondero aspect or like, you know, like that like working man, blue collar, drinking with my friends to forget my woes,
right?
Party till the sun comes up just because like this is the only way I know how to live, and like because nothing matters because I've been trying to get successful my whole life and I never have, so I'm just gonna say fuck it and party. There's such a sincerity to what he's writing where whereas, like, a lot of the bands we've been talking about before that are written for teenagers, they're easy to make fun of for adults. It's easy to go back and go, this stuff's pretty self-serious and pretty, like, overly emotional and, like, a little bit, like, a little bit too serious for, like, the 20-year-olds that are writing it.
That wasn't the end of the world.
Yeah, and, like...
It wasn't the end of the world.
Yeah, it was fun when I was a teenager to get really emotional about it. And I think a lot of those songwriters had really great structure and, like, there's a reason why those songs were hits and why their bands took off, because they had albums that were packed with a lot of energy and a lot of, like, really listenable stuff. But Jeff Rosenstock, I think... from a songwriting perspective, is the person that to this day I can like, and I only discovered Jeff Rosenstock a few years ago because of you, and instantly I was hooked because I was like, this is scratching my pop punk itch that no band has in a while, and also he's like my age, and he's like,
and he's not stuck in the past, he's in the present.
Yeah,
his lyrics are about the present, but the style, he's doing it perfectly.
Yeah, so cool. I love Jeff Rosenstock.
Yeah. And he's not stuck in 2001 pop punk style either. It's very much so like Austin, like you were talking about. You know, it's got the blue collarness to it.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific? I'm moving on to the next genre. Are there any specific emo influences? People I wrote down are like, Well, actually, let me see if you can say a few first. And are there like specific emo?
Man, like specific bands?
Or songwriters.
Oh, sure. Well, okay, so a couple pop in my head. One is, it's this band called At the Drive-In. I can't remember what the lead singer of that guy, what he is, but it's like this emo hardcore. I don't like that style, but this guy nailed it. Mm-hmm. It's just the most emo stuff you've ever heard. And this other band called Juliana Theory, I think you said their name earlier.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, they just nail it. They kill it.
Would you put Rocket Summer into emo or pop punk?
Oh, I think he walks the line.
Because another one of those voices that's so intense.
Oh, my gosh.
Like his singing, like his affectations that he does while singing are so intense. But since he commits so hard to it, it's like...
You know, that's such a thing, though. Like, there were so many bands that they really blurred for a while that line of pop punk and emo. Like, it went hand in hand. You couldn't, like, so many of these bands we liked, like, they would go onto the emo side and onto the pop punk side. They kind of did both of them, like May.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Oh, yeah, May.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people who know us or who have, like, heard of us would call us out for being such Elliott Smith fans and would say that that's really emo. Like, I would put Elliott Smith in the singer-songwriter umbrella and, like, the folk and singer-songwriter umbrella. But I think for mainstream people who aren't big Elliott fans, like, he's just emo. Because all they know about him is that he's a sad boy.
That's pretty funny. Like, that would not be my first place to... their first spot to place him. Exactly. Singer-songwriter. Elliott Smith is a singer-songwriter.
And that's how I feel about Connor Oberst. But I think, again, a lot of people would put Connor Oberst in the category because there's something about Connor and Elliott's vocal style that sounds like they're crying while they're singing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Connor just sounds so, like, you know, just like, I'm trying to just write this song, but I can barely get the words out because I'm really sad. You know, and then, like, Elliot's got this pain and he just needs you to know that he's so bummed out. you know, and like there's just so much pain drenched in Elliot's voice. And it's even a thing where like I've listened to it lately and been like, oh, maybe this doesn't appeal to me as much as an adult, where like part of me wants to go, grow up.
Yeah, where you're like, I'm beyond that now.
Yeah, grow the hell up, Elliot. Yeah. Like, you're a really talented musician and you need to like utilize your skills to do something other than just whine.
That's funny you say that. And you're talking about Bright Eyes, his song, First Day of My Life. This is the first day of my life. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't die before I met you. Uh-huh. Back then, that line meant everything to me.
Oh,
I was like, that's it.
It's a great line.
That's how I feel. And it still does hold up, but it's the same thing where like I'm placing him at a time of his life where it's like, this is high school and these times matter more than anything. I know he was out of high school, but it's definitely how I felt about that line at the time. I look back and who that line, what the person that was tied to me with that line, just like, it makes me chuckle. I'm like, yeah, I like don't remember anything about you at this point.
I still think Connor is one of America's great songwriters.
Oh, for sure.
I really do think that Connor Oberst is one of the most underappreciated songwriters in America right now. And I think that like he has been, like I think he was most appreciated in his youth for being kind of a child savant and like a wonder kind. And like it was like, wow, like this kid's writing such mature stuff, but he's still killing it. I saw him at Carnegie Hall a few years back and I was just like, this guy's still such a prolific and like profound songwriter. And I've talked to people who disagree with me, like Sam Burton was like, I just think that he hasn't progressed and it still sounds like he's writing the same stuff. Yeah. That I'm like, look, he's still in that same vein of folk songs and like of like the same familiar structures, but I think he's talking about being a father and he's talking about like marriage and he's talking about like getting divorced, like divorced, and like
very true.
His themes are evolving and he's getting more political and like, I don't know. I think that some of the songs off that last album that he released, like Gossamer Thin and stuff, like gorgeous songs. And
well, he put out a really cool album under the kind of more punk band that he has, the Desaparecidos.
Mm-hmm.
He put out an album, it's probably now like 2 years ago, but he's a guy that he has so many different styles. He does Bright Eyes, he does Connor Oberst, he does Desaparecidos. He just did one last year with, I forget what her name is, but he came out with, and he toured with this girl. It's going to bother me. I forget her name.
Phoebe Bridger.
Phoebe Bridger, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, incredible album. If you haven't heard that,
Phoebe
that's
Bridgers
incredible. Or Bridgers. Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah. Well, then there's Phoebe Waller-Bridge that's Fleabag, that show Fleabag. So that's confusing. Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Phoebe Bridgers, you need to get together and figure out who's going to...
Who's who?
Yeah, who's going to fix that? Because, like, I have another Austin Archer out there who's also making music, but, like, he hasn't released a thing since, like, 2012, and so I'm just kind of hoping he just fucks off. Like, I'm just kind of hoping he just, like, accepts that, like, he lost.
Austin, you're a wash-up, bud.
Yeah. Austin Archer, if you're out there listening, the Austin Archer from Georgia.
Yeah, other Austin Archer.
Get out of here, bud. Back off. Seriously. Like, either release a new album and challenge me, or get out of here. Like,
wait, didn't you message him once?
No, I felt like I was going to message him because I wrote him a song. I wrote a song for him that I've never released. And I was going to message him and be like, hey, bud, I wrote you a song. Just thought you'd be interested to hear it. And maybe like you want to write me a song and we could like go back and forth and like write songs to each other. But also like we've never actually had any official contact with each other. He surely knows who I am because when you search us on Spotify, both of our pages come up. And so like he's probably way annoyed. But again, I'm like, go ahead and release something and challenge me.
Yeah.
Or delete your Spotify account. I'm saying it right. Okay.
The pressure's on, Austin Archer out there.
Yeah, and Phoebe Bridgers and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Let's have a head-to-head here. But they're both so good. Phoebe Bridgers is so good.
Yeah, she is.
I want to get into that in a bit. Really quick, I want to go through, okay, so emo stuff. I wrote Chris Garaba, Nick Drake, and Elliot Smith. But again, Nick Drake, I'd put him under singer-songwriter, but I think a lot of people would think Nick Drake is pretty emo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Folk. What do you think?
Oh, man. That's a big list. Well, when you say folk, I think my first thought is going back to my roots, like Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan's the first one on my list.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who's next?
Elliot, because again, I think that he is under that. Now, this is a big one for us. Now, this didn't come in. I think we found this band after we had started writing songs together, but it was the first band that we found and we went, oh, that's us. That's what we do. And like, they're now like our favorite band, Slow Club.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people compared us to Kings of Convenience when we started. They said, oh, you guys are like Kings of Convenience. And it's like, okay, yeah, they're two guys that play folk songs. And they're like, but Slow Club is, if Us Thieves could have an idealized version of what we want our band to be, Chris would be a girl or I'd be a girl, and we'd be Slow Club.
Oh, man. Yeah. What a cool band. And that's a band that every single album they evolve.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Oh, by the way, going back to one band that is blurring a lot of these lines, just have to say it, Brand New.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I brought them up. Uh-huh. Emo. Their first album's pop punk. Then they go to emo. They go to like hardcore for a moment. They're a cool band. Yeah, that's like this as well.
New.
I love Brand New. But yeah. Slow Cub all the way.
I wrote down Belle and Sebastian.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. There's
really solid catchiness. Folks. Yeah, that those folk progressions, those guitar progressions and stuff.
Right,
and,
right.
And then I also wrote down Nick Drake. He's under that umbrella, too. Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you remember this, but I visited his grave last year.
Oh, yeah. You finally got to go.
Yeah, it took 9 hours from London where I was at to take a bus and to walk. Or I had to take a train to a bus and then walk 2 miles. And then I got to his grave.
Fun little trivia. If you want to look up Us Thieves on Spotify, or is this song on Spotify, or is it only on our Bandcamp?
No,
there's
Spotify.
A song called Tanworth and Arden that's the town that Nick Drake was from. And Chris and I wrote this song about Nick Drake and about how we sort of are bummed out that he might not know the impact that he had.
Yeah.
And that
I sat at his grave and I played that song on my phone. I don't believe in those sort of things that, you know, he was listening, but just in case, I played that song to say, thanks, man.
Yeah. Nick Drake is part of the 27 Club, killed himself. And so that song was kind of a tribute to him and his influence. Singer-songwriter stuff. I guess all of those people that we just mentioned. But a few that stand out to me are like Ben Folds is a big one for me.
Sure.
I know he's not huge for you, but he's like a massive.
He's got some good songs, but he was definitely your guy.
It's a massive influence on how I write. I think Tanner said to me the other day, Tanner was like, I like your songs because they're like pretty straightforward. Like they're just like literal. Like you're talking about what you're talking about and you're not really disguising it in too many metaphors. And I was like, yeah, I get that from Ben Folds, being like straightforward about what the song's about, you know? And then using maybe some poetic imagery and stuff in there, but being pretty straight up about, I don't use a lot of metaphor.
Oh, for sure.
I put Bowie in singer-songwriter because I also was like, how do you categorize David Bowie?
Yeah, because it doesn't feel fair to say he's a pop artist.
Or rock.
I mean, or rock.
Or indie rock or folk or...
He's hard to place.
He's like an entity.
Yeah, he is an entity. He's his own genre.
Yeah.
Man. You know, I will say that singer-songwriters, though, like these days, there's nothing better than hearing like a good female singer-songwriter.
So that's when I noticed as I was making this list, I was like, man, there was a time in my life when all of my musical influences were dudes.
Yeah.
And over the last 3 or 4 years, all of my favorite artists and all of my favorite bands are female.
Oh,
like,
man.
Almost exclusively.
Lucy Dacus, Talking About You.
Lucy Dacus, Phoebe Bridgers. Lucius is my jam.
Lucius is cool.
Is my new favorite band. I'm obsessed with Lucius.
Yeah.
Haim.
Shit, I don't know.
Jewish
sure.
Sisters.
Maggie Rogers.
Maggie Rogers.
There's this great band, by the way, out there. My favorite band I watched play last year, named Great Grandpa. It's a full band, but the girl that leads it, and I think it's a full girl band. I think it's a queer band, which is really fun and fucking awesome. There's nothing better than hearing this heartfelt song coming from a girl's side of, you know, of things.
Middle Kids, Amy Shark.
Yeah.
I just found a new one, The Greeting Committee. So awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that Australian pop punk band that you sent to me that's so cool? Like Summer Camp or something like that, or
oh, Camp Cope.
Camp Cope.
Oh,
Camp
they're
Cope.
So cool.
So cool. So awesome. Would you call them pop punk?
Oh, yeah.
It's very pop.
I would call them pop punk. Camp Cope is the band. You know, Spotify sends you the thing at the end of the year, how many streams you had of who. That's the band I listened to the most last year.
Camp Cope?
Yeah. That's what I listened to the most last year.
They reminded me a lot of Bully, who was like my biggest band.
Yeah, you showed me Bully.
A couple of years ago, Bully.
Oh, they were cool.
I don't know what changed. I don't know if I just got bored of dudes.
Yeah.
Or if it was getting woke or like, I don't know like what changed. But like, I kind of have a hard time getting on board with new bands that are led by men.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've just had enough in my life of having my own bullshit reflected back to me. And there's something that feels really fresh about like getting that new perspective.
Sure.
But it's like, I've probably listened to Lizzo's album like 30 times, honestly. I think Lizzo's the shit. And like, I think maybe the turning point was honestly when the first time I listened to 1989 by Taylor Swift all the way through, because I was so not a Taylor Swift fan and was such a like Taylor Swift hater. And I remember like at that time, everyone was talking about 1989 and it was like on everyone's like Instagram. And it was like this big thing that people were like, no, this is a dope album. And I remember listening to it when I was moving to New York and just,
you're like,
I couldn't stop listening to it. And I listened to it for like 2 weeks straight, like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I just was like, okay, that's a really good album.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to Ryan Adams' cover album of it over and over and over. And
yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it was just like stepping outside of my usual thing. And then I just became pretty much like exclusively listening to girl bands for the next, for the last 5 years. Like,
for sure.
Yeah.
No, it's there, man. Nothing to me is better at this point than like just a girl punk emo vocalist. I don't know. I'll always have a special place in my heart for punk and emo collaborating.
Yeah.
It's just the best. And then with a female singer these days, it's just like
Courtney Barnett.
Oh, yeah. Courtney Barnett.
Courtney
yeah.
Barnett's
Holy
so
shit.
Good.
Holy
yeah.
shit. Yeah.
So good. Yeah. And like, I don't know. There's something fun about like hearing songs where they're just shitting all over men too. And I'm just sitting there like,
I know, really
and I'm just sitting in my car like, yeah, fuck men. like Camp Cope like shits all
oh,
over
yeah.
men.
Oh yeah.
And he's just like, it's another man telling me how to write, like how to promote my music. It's another man telling, you know, and I'm just
so
like
good.
And I'm like, yeah, you tell him, Camp Cope.
Yeah, that guy's a dick.
Not me though.
I'm on your side.
Yeah.
If you met me, you'd feel different.
Mm-hmm. No, but I'd be friends with Camp Cope.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know that Lucius would love me if I met them. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
I know that if Lucius and I met, that they'd be that they'd be my girlfriends for sure.
Hey Lucius.
Hey Lucius, just wanted to say I'm a big fan. They go, "Oh, who are you?" And I go, "Oh, it's just me, Austin Archer."
You know.
And they're like, "Wait a minute. Should we go out?"
Wait, did you mean that?
Yeah.
Did you mean that when you just said your name?
Is that really unwoke to just want to be Lucius's boyfriend?
No, I don't think so.
Hey, Lucius, I know I got a girlfriend and she's the best, but if you guys want to be my girlfriend, the two of you,
yeah,
that could be fun.
No, I'd say that to, hey, Camp Cope, if you're out there, I'm out here.
I'm pretty sure Camp Cope is all gay.
Yeah, but I still miss him.
Yeah. Still wish they'd be my girlfriend. We listened to some girl bands when we were coming up. Like yeah. Rilo Kiley was always there.
Oh, classic. Rilo Kiley. I really loved the Cardigans and
yeah.
Richard. I was talking about this earlier with you, Rachel Yamagata.
No, Rachel Yamagata.
Rachel Yamagata. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, she's. Oh, and who else? There were. I'm sure that.
The
oh,
Weepies? Even
the
though
Weepies.
It's a guy and a girl, but.
The
yeah, the Weepies.
What was the name of that girl who. Garden State soundtrack girl?
Imogen Heap.
Yeah.
Imogen Heap was so dope. Regina Spektor's always been a big influence for me. I love Regina Spektor. I think she's such an amazing songwriter. I like Ingrid Michaelson. I like. Yeah.
You know what's weird? I'm just realizing now. My first, like, female singer-songwriter friend, I don't think it's until, like, almost my mid-20s. I was just all the guys, everyone I played shows with, there was always a boys club doing those songwriting nights and all that, having those shows, house shows and all.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we're such a fan of female vocalists and all that, because we were oversaturated.
Yeah, we had a lot. And now every time I hear like a dude band, I just feel like, yeah, I know.
I've heard it.
I'm like, yeah, I know. I've got enough of these.
I wrote it. I know.
Yeah. Or maybe we get competitive or like something like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
And we feel less competitive with the women. I don't know. Like I'm a huge Beyonce fan. Like, and I know it's like, yeah, you kind of have to be, but it's like, I love those, you know, I love like busting out Beyonce tracks that people are like, oh, I don't know this song. Like,
sure.
My favorite Beyonce song is Countdown. Like a lot of people are going to be like, duh, Countdown's not like a deep cut, but there's a lot of people who don't know Countdown.
I honestly, I don't know if I know any Beyonce songs, but I've heard she's really something.
I literally brought her up because I wanted to call you out because I know you don't listen to Beyonce. And they'd be like, oh, so you don't, yeah, you like girls, but you just like white girls, huh? You don't listen to Lizzo. You don't listen to Beyonce.
I don't listen. Well, JoJo likes Lizzo a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I've gotten used to her. I didn't like her at all, but now I'm there.
Well, that's your next thing you got to do, Chris. You got to listen to some Alicia Keys. You got to listen to.
Oh, Alicia Keys. Forgot about her.
Alicia Keys is so good.
Yeah. Huh.
Crazy good.
Actually, that's true. Okay, I'm going to call myself out. I don't know. I listen to queer female-led bands, and I don't know if I listen to, like, any black women.
This is a gotcha moment, Chris. I'm going to play a sound effect right here that goes, you just got gotcha'd. And that's going to be a new thing on the show where I have people on the show, and then I go, yeah, it sounds like you're doing a lot of good work in your community, but do you listen to Beyonce? And then they go, oh, I mean, am I supposed to? And then I go, you just got gotcha.
Well, I will say this then. For the genres of music I like, they seem to be pretty filled with like basically just white people. Oh my God, I like white music.
Yeah.
That's like a thing. Oh my God. Okay.
How much hip hop do you listen to?
Oh, I don't know. How much basketball do I play these days?
Are you saying that hip-hop is, or that basketball is exclusively a black thing, Chris?
Oh, God damn it. No, I just mean no.
Chris, I'll have you know that Luka Doncic right now is averaging
Cut the mic. Cut the mic.
This is your presidential campaign coming in. This interview's over.
But there is a thing to be said with what you're saying, though, that it's so easy to just be stuck in like the type of music you listen to and... But also at the same time, like, I don't give a shit. I like what I like.
Yeah.
But I don't, probably wouldn't hurt to branch out.
It's just fun, I think. For me, I've always enjoyed trying to enjoy things in lots of different genres, even in country. Like, I
don't
like pop country music, and I think it's the easiest form to make fun of. But, like, I find country singers all the time that I just fall in love with because I think their songwriting is so solid.
Yeah, you've sent me a few.
And... yeah, there's this guy, Matt Harlan, that I'm, like, obsessed with. I think he's such a good songwriter. And, you know, like, the good old classics, like Johnny Cash. And, and then, I mean, I don't care. I love Rascal Flatts. I still do. Like, I think Rascal Flatts crushes.
They're a catchy band.
They crush. And, you know, I love the Dixie Chicks. I think the Dixie Chicks kill. I think the Dixie Chicks are, like, I love that they're political and that they're, like, kind of a fuck you girl country band.
Yeah, they're awesome. You know who I got into a lot this last year, or 2 years ago? Either way, we played a cover of her at the Boss TV show. Cher.
Oh, yeah.
She's fun, and that song's fun, but for real, go through her catalog a little more. Cher's such a badass.
Yeah, yeah.
She's such a badass. Yeah,
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks, for sure.
Stevie Nicks, ABBA.
Great stuff.
The other genre that we didn't mention, that there, I only have one listed, and so I'm just going to see if we can say it on the count of three.
Okay.
This is our biggest electronic influence.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah.
One, two, three.
I don't know, Postal
LCD
Service?
Sound
oh,
system.
God damn it.
Wow.
Okay, let's try it again. One, two, three.
Postal Service. But not, obviously, it's LCD Sound System, Chris. I was going to change mine to Postal Service and hope that you changed yours.
I was hoping you were going to do that.
Yeah, obviously it's...
Oh my God, okay, you know what? Boss TV would never have happened without LCD sound system. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. That, it can't. We can't, I don't
we
think
we
can
We literally have
get into
songs
it.
That are direct ripoffs of LCD. Like Just Go in Disco is just a LCD sound system ripoff, where the whole song I'm just kind of going like, hey, you know, I see you over there. You're not discoing. Come on. Come on, go. Go hard. Like that. I just think of James Murphy being like, I'm hanging out with my friends, and we're at the house, and we're dancing, and it goes like this. And, it, like,
oh,
and, he's,
so
just, and he's just got a beat in the background that's just going.
Oh, my favorite line is when he goes, I heard that you and your friends sold your guitars and bought turntables. I heard that you and your friends sold your turntables and bought guitars. It's just like that's real. Like,
oh, it's so good.
It's real and it's so good.
It's so good. Just like with me on the outside and you on the inside, there's advantages to each.
Advantages to each.
with you being uptight and me being all right, there's advantages to each. Advantages, advantages. Just like you listen to their lyrics sometimes, it's just like, this is so good.
It's just one song called, and the whole thing's just Daft Punk is playing at my house. Daft Punk is playing at my house. My house. I'll show you the ropes, kids. Show you the ropes.
It just sounds like he just puts on like a beat track and then just kind of like does different loops. Yeah. And he just sort of like does like weird beat poetry. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes he has like real bangers like Oh Baby and Dance Yourself Clean, where like,
Dance Yourself Clean, that changed everything.
Yeah. And obviously his big influences are like the Talking Heads. Like, yeah, it's really clear that he's being influenced by David Byrne. Like that, you know.
Sure.
Like, yeah. But LCD, how would you say the Postal Service before LCD? And that's actually weird that I didn't mention Death Cab in any of those things. Yeah. We didn't say Death Cab or Postal Service.
You know what's
service.
Weird to me? Who you didn't mention?
Who?
I saw it coming a mile away and you didn't say it. The Killers.
Oh, duh. Why do I always forget that my favorite band is The Killers?
Yeah, The Killers. And then we talked about the format, but you didn't even say Fun.
Well, yeah. Okay, Fun's awesome. But like, the reason why I say the format is that's my hipster thing of being like,
I like,
everyone knows Fun, but do you know who Fun was before they were Fun?
Right, but the Killers.
The Killers and also Brandon Flowers. I will separate those into two things where I'm like, okay, yeah, Fun and also Nate Roos's solo career. I like all of Nate Roos's music. I like his solo album. I like Fun's two albums, but the format's where it's at.
Oh, the format's, yeah.
Yeah, and special. The format is a better band than Fun. They are, but Fun has cool things like Andrew Dost, who's awesome, and Bleachers is so cool.
Oh yeah, Bleachers, they're great.
Yeah, and but The Killers and Brandon Flowers, I think one of the most underrated bands of the last 20 years. They've written literally nothing but hits. Like every single time they come out with an album, mm-hmm. there's like three or four songs that are big hits, and they've had songs on the radio for the last 20 years. You know, like they just like have been consistently. Yeah. And you know, like, and everyone like knows a few of the songs. Everyone knows like Mr. Brightside and stuff. But they're one of those bands that can headline a stadium show and play for 2 hours and never not play a hit. And and they've never been on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. They've never, I think, won a major award. Like, it's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it's really nuts.
Managed to pull that off.
Yeah.
So I do want to say one thing about Postal Service. Mm-hmm. Here's a little tidbit. I don't even know if it's true anymore. I've just said it so many times that I think it's true. But first off, the Postal Service, that was such a good album when it came out. 2004, yeah. Same time as Garden State came out. Mm-hmm. Most important event of my life. but, you know, Postal Service, I was talking about this with JoJo the other night, that they were such a great band. And then you're like, why didn't they put out a second album? From how I remember it, everybody, the lead singer, Ben Gibbard, he was pretty upset that it took the Postal Service to really get Death Cab to launch. Because it was after Postal Service came out that Death Cab really launched. And as far as I understand it, he didn't want to do another Postal Service album because
Death Cab
he had
the
a bitterness.
Thing he was trying to get going.
Yeah, Postal Service was his boss TV.
Yeah. And he didn't want to have his success be tied to someone mm-hmm. else because Postal Service was such a dual venture.
Oh, yeah. It was him and what was
remember,
that?
We don't even know who the other guy is.
Oh, I remember. Dintel, I think was the name. Dintel.
Wow, that's kind of a... like harsh of Gibbard to do that, to like be like, no, I was trying to get my band
mm-hmm.
going, and now that my band's going, like, thanks, bud. But
yeah man, I would have been stoked if Boss TV, it's like, oh, now Us Thieves are gonna launch, or now Chris Burns gonna launch, just great. But I don't like playing shows, so never mind.
Last thing I thought it would be fun to do is you wanna play me a song?
Sure. Sure.
You play a Chris Buehn song for me?
Yeah. I'll play. I got.
Can I make a request or will you just play a song?
Ooh.
If I made
a request and I might play it.
Let me think here. What do I want to hear?
Back this up.
What do I want to hear?
I can't play It's Good to See You anymore because my fingers are screwed.
Mmm.
Just direct.
What about just play the song you were gonna play. That's the thing is, anytime I think about my favorite Chris Bjorn songs, I am flooded with like 30 songs. And so then I just am like, it's hard for me to pick one. So just play whatever song you were going to play.
This is one that I'm going to play. Your mind plays tricks on you. You're always saying sorry for something that you didn't do. I can see in your eyes there's something in them now, or something beyond them, or maybe just before, maybe just before. 'Cause you were laying like a pile of dirt, you got all settled. The sun would dry you out, the rain would throw you around and sort of clump you up emotionally. But someone came along who needed you to even out their bed of flowers. So even though there's beauty growing out of you, to me, you're still a pile of dirt. But now you're a good one. A pretty pile of dirt.
That's it. And you know, like I said at the beginning, I didn't want to do this episode because I feel like we're this really important band that you just need to know about. You know, we are aware of how small what we have done is. But the whole idea here, if you take anything away from this, is just that we don't regret a single second that we spent then or that we spend now on making music. It's really important to us and really fulfilling to us, regardless of what kind of response it garners. If you take anything away from this, take that, you know? That if there's something you want to do, you should do it. And don't do it with the expectation of getting any kind of validating response. Just do it because it'll be valuable to you to have the experience, you know? Working on music together is just something we like doing. We're pitching ourselves. If you want, you can go out and listen to more Chris Bjorn music. You can go and look up Chris Bjorn. He's got a ton of albums you can listen to. You can go and look up Us Thieves. Please, by all means, go listen to Us Thieves. The music's out there. It's meant to be enjoyed. We make it so that people will enjoy it. But also, we make it just because we really love making it. Boss TV's a whole lot of fun. Go listen to Boss TV. I've got a single coming out on Friday. It's going to be streaming everywhere. Chris mixed and mastered it. It's part of my new album. It's the second single from the new album. It's called Let's Move. Really excited about it, so go listen to that. Go make some music of your own. Go paint a painting. Go take a class. Go do that thing that you've been thinking about doing. That's it. People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn, who you just heard, over at Marmalade Music. Go to marmalademusicslc.com, let them know you listen to People Pleaser, and take 20% off your first project. Rate the show 5 stars, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and I'll read the review on the show and review you back. I think that's it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another fun episode. Love you. Be good. Okay, bye.